Well, the LSU Tigers made history on National Signing Day. How? I'll explain. Plus, so much more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, we are on YouTube as well. So listen on the go and also watch on YouTube, Locked On LSU. My name is Caroline Fenton. I'm your host, as I am every day. I'm an LSU graduate. I've been covering LSU sports since 2016, and I'm now a Sports Talk radio host in Nashville, Tennessee. Before we get into the history that was made on National Signing Day, I got to let y'all know that today's edition of Locked On LSU was brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. So Wednesday was National Signing Day, and LSU made history because this was the first time ever that LSU didn't sign a single player on this period of National Signing Day. Not early signing day, but actual National Signing Day. And you might be thinking, oh my goodness, what is going on? What went wrong? Why couldn't LSU? It's okay. It's okay. Increasingly so, year over year, really over the past few years, really ever since I've been covering college football over the past 7 years, that sounds gross to say, it makes me feel old. Every single year, this February National Signing Day gets less and less important in terms of college football, because your four stars, your five stars, your biggest names that you're going after every single year, they usually know where they're going by December. They probably have had a really good idea of where they're going to go for a while now, and they sign their national letter of intent in December. Actually, interestingly enough, 293 of the ESPN top 100 have already committed. Almost all, every single player on ESPN's top 300 list had already committed by National Signing Day. So it's okay. Honestly, I didn't expect for there to be any sort of splashy news or big splashy signing on National Signing Day. It's something that I mentioned on the podcast on Tuesday. There was really one name, one player that I was looking at, like maybe could sign with LSU on Wednesday, and that was Jamel Howard. He's a three-star defensive tackle from Chicago. He made his official visit to LSU in January. He also had Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Miami on his radar. He had initially committed to Wisconsin, and then once Luke Fickell got hired, he decommitted, reopened his recruitment, made a few more visits. He took a visit to Michigan, visited Michigan in January, visited Miami in January as well. And then yesterday, on Wednesday, rather, he signed with Wisconsin. So, you know, he's a good athlete. He has a great size. 6'3", 320 pounds at 18 years old. Just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he's ready to hop in immediately. But I was looking at, you know, the defensive line positions, and LSU is pretty stacked where it is right now. Absolutely, they could use some young developmental, like I call them like farm players, the guys that probably aren't going to see much of the field now but could be good in a year or two. I viewed him as that. So it's not necessarily like an absolute franchise-breaking, just soul-crushing signing. He'll do great at Wisconsin, I'm sure. But overall, you know, that was really just the one three-star defensive tackle, but was the one name that I was really looking at. So no signees yesterday, but that's okay. LSU had 25 signees in December, ranked the number 6 class in the country. So that's a majority. That's a big chunk of your freshman class right there is who already committed in December in the early signing period. And then 11 transfers in this class. Of course, we've touched on it several times on this podcast that LSU has the top transfer class in the country. And like I mentioned, you know, 293 of the 300 top ESPN prospects already signed in December. One of those prospects that hadn't already signed was Jaden Rashada, who did sign in December and then, of course, was released from his national letter of intent from Florida. And then he ended up signing with Arizona State yesterday. You know, he's a legacy there. His dad went to Arizona State, played for Arizona State. Now Arizona State has like 70,000 quarterbacks in its room. You think Ole Miss is bad? Take a look at Arizona State. But, you know, that doesn't – that's beside the point. It just feels like – you know, I have a friend of mine who works for 24/7 Sports. And she posted on Instagram and was like, oh my gosh, I've worked, you know, 28 hours over the last 3 days. It's been crazy. It's been nuts. And I was like, why? I'm like, oh yeah, I like totally forgot that February 1st was National Signing Day. And maybe that says more about me than it does about, you know, the rest of the college football world or National Signing Day itself. But I'm pretty plugged into recruiting. You know, when in early signing period, I was ramping up for a couple of weeks. So I think that kind of speaks volumes about what this February National Signing Day period really has become. It's really ultimately become secondary. There was one player that we had talked about several times with John Garcia Jr. It's a player that I talked about before the early signing period, and that was Nicholas Harbor. He's a five-star out of the Washington, D.C. area. We talked about it with John Garcia Jr. since LSU was kind of in the mix with him earlier on in the season because he was looking at playing football and playing track. Those were two of his biggest priorities. And then also academics. That was very, very important to him. So I looked at LSU along with Oregon to be one of those schools that has a very well-respected, very good football program along with a really solid track program as well. Oregon and LSU stand out, you know, most notably in my mind. He decided to defer his commitment because of track. So that's one five-star. That's one of the ESPN top 300 that deferred to the spring just for those reasons. Just because, you know, because of track and because of academics, he just wasn't quite ready to make that decision quite yet. And he committed to South Carolina yesterday. So really not a whole lot of juice to the February signing period. I wish there was more. I wish we could be more excited about it. It is what it is. You know, now with NIL and now that a lot of states, Louisiana included, California is another one of them, where high school players can benefit from NIL, you're seeing these players get in sooner rather than later. You're seeing these players, you know, start getting recruited in middle school when they're like 12, 13, 14 years old. They know where they're going to go. So this period just seems kind of secondary, like at least for me, and you may feel differently. I almost view it as like a red flag when a player defers to this national signing period, and that's probably not very fair of me, but when I see a player who is very highly recruited, four-star, five-star, has a lot of options in front of him, when I see that player say, no, I'm not going to sign the early signing period, I'm going to wait, I'm like, why? Like, what more do you need to see? So all of that to say, don't be concerned that LSU didn't sign anybody in the early signing period. LSU now has 36 signees, both between high school recruitment and via the transfer portal in the 2023 class. They have five or six open scholarships that they have to fill in this 2023 class, which I assume they look to do in the spring transfer portal period when that transfer portal reopens in April and May. So what are some positions that those open scholarships could go to? Take a look at the 2023 roster offensively and where some of those holes can be filled. And we will do that coming up next. This year, the only app that you will need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel. It's America's number one sportsbook. And we are so excited here at Locked On about our new sports betting partner because they're the number one sportsbook in America, and it is FanDuel. So if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better because there are so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. So download the FanDuel app now so you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. So FanDuel lets you bet on everything. They've got the money line to the point spreads, all the way down to who will score a touchdown. I mean, FanDuel's got so many great different prop bets. So the FanDuel's Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Best of all, you get paid your winnings instantly. And I think my favorite thing about the FanDuel Sportsbook app is it is so user-friendly. It's quick. It doesn't take a long time to load. You get in there. The user interface is really easy to navigate. It breaks everything down very easily. It's easy for me to see all the information of the games, the point spreads, the money line, what time the game is, any fun odds boosts that might be going on in the FanDuel Sportsbook app. So super, super easy to use and super quick. super fun. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/LockedOn to claim your no sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That is FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Now, Locked On is heading to the Senior Bowl. Get inside analysis from the hosts that cover this NFL's next generation in college and find out which NFL draft boards these players will be climbing. All in one location on the Locked On Network. So subscribe to Locked On NFL Draft for nightly live shows from the Senior Bowl on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Okay, so after National Signing Day, LSU did not sign a single signee on National Signing Day on February 1st. That is okay. They got 36 players in this class, 25 of them signees, 11 of them are transfer portal players, but they've still got 5 scholarships left. So I'm taking a look at LSU's roster, and today I'm just focusing offensively. Tomorrow, I'll take a look defensively and see where some of those holes can be filled as well. But looking at the 5 remaining scholarships that LSU has to fill, we've got 3 quarterbacks on the roster: Jaden Daniels, Garrett Nussmeier, Ricky Collins. Now, I don't think that LSU necessarily needs a 4th quarterback. However, I wouldn't hate it if LSU went out and got another quarterback, kind of an insurance quarterback. And I think it could benefit LSU greatly to find that player in the spring transfer portal period, because I think that there are a bunch of quarterbacks, and most notably, 2 schools I already mentioned, Arizona State and Ole Miss, 2 schools that are loaded at the quarterback position, all with quarterbacks that are probably going to want to find other places. Now, Ole Miss isn't going to be the one, because we already saw Walker Howard transfer to Ole Miss. And if Jackson Dart does decide to transfer out of Ole Miss, if it's going to be the Spencer Sanders and Walker Howard show with Lane Kiffin, then Jackson Dart's going to go somewhere where he can start immediately and not be QB3. But I think in the spring transfer portal period, just called it the Spansfer portal period, might just start calling it that, the Fansfer and the Spansfer, the fall and the spring transfer portal periods. Anyways, you're going to want to find a guy maybe as insurance to be your number 3, to be that guy that, just in case, knock on all the wood, Jaden Daniels gets hurt, in case Garrett Nussmeier, knock on wood, maybe gets injured, maybe decides to transfer in the spring period. I don't expect that to happen. I'm also never going to say never. I think it would at least behoove LSU to entertain the idea of bringing a 3rd guy in. Jaden Daniels gets hurt. Garrett Nussmeier gets hurt. Garrett Nussmeier walks out the door. You need a 3rd guy that's not Ricky Collins. So you can allow Ricky Collins that year 1 to just be scout team, to just hold a clipboard, to just learn. Not saying that Ricky Collins wouldn't be capable of it, but I don't think that if those 2 things happen, or both quarterbacks get hurt, or 1 transfers, I don't think it's going to happen, but you still want that insurance. Crazier things have happened. We saw the San Francisco 49ers have to put their 4th string quarterback in the game, and that still wasn't enough. They had to put Christian McCaffrey as their quarterback on Sunday in the NFC Championship game. So crazier things have happened. I wouldn't hate to see LSU bring in another quarterback. So add that to one position group. I wouldn't mind adding in those 5 scholarship spots. Looking at the running back position, it's I think fine. Honestly, I do think that LSU could go into this season as currently constructed. You've got 3 guys returning. Noah Kane, who has 2 years of eligibility remaining. You've got Josh Williams. Those 2 years are 1 year and then 1 redshirt year. Josh Williams has 1 year of eligibility remaining. And then you've got Armani Goodwin, 3 years, 2 years of eligibility plus 1 year of redshirt remaining. Now, if you want to get in another guy in there, you could. I really don't see the need. If you see a guy who's super talented that could fit in the system and you think that he's a good fit culturally, then yeah, bring him in. I'm never going to turn away good players that are good fits. But really, overall, looking at those 3 returners and then Caleb Jackson, a 4-star local kid from Baton Rouge coming into the 2023 class, and then Trey Hawley, another 4-star running back in the 2023 class from Farmerville, they're coming in this class. You've got a running back room with 5 players, 3 returners. I think you might be fine at running back. Another position group I think you're fine with? Wide receiver. You've got Kyron Lacy, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, and Chris Hilton all returning. Of course, you lose Kayshon Booty. You lose Jack Besh, but also Landon Ibieta, who's a true freshman this past year, also could step up and play a larger role. And then you also bring in a haul of talented receivers in this 2023 class. Shelton Sampson coming in, one of the top recruits in Louisiana, one of the top wide receiver recruits in the country. You've got Kyle Parker, a four-star wide receiver coming in from Texas. You've got Kai Prian, a four-star wide receiver out of New Orleans. You've got Jaylen Brown, another four-star, cusp on of a five-star recruit from Miami. So you've got four and five stars coming in the 2023 class. You've got five returners, four of them starters this past year. I think you're good at wide receiver. And I also couch that with, if there's a guy who's interested in LSU and you think he's a good fit and he's a really good player, you've got a really solid player who might leave because of circumstances from wherever they might be, you bring him in. You never turn away good players. Also, I failed to mention the one transfer coming in, Aaron Anderson from New Orleans. From Alabama. So that's going to help you out on special teams. That's going to help you out in terms of wide receiver depth. He didn't have a ton of playing time in Alabama, so I don't know how ready he is to contribute as a receiver, but in special teams, absolutely. So I think at wide receiver, you could be set. Also, looking at tight end. Now, I think that is a position group that could use some work. Mason Taylor is your only returning starter. He's got 3 years of eligibility left. You'll take it. But you're going to need a little bit more established depth at the tight end position. Now, did Cole Taylor transfer because he didn't see a path to starting? And they really didn't need that depth there? Maybe. But I don't know how you look at that position and the way that Mike Denbrock and Brian Kelly like to use that position and say, no. We're good on a guy who has been here and is established in the system. But you do have three kids coming in, and I always call them kids. I don't mean that derogatorily. But three high school players coming in. Mac Markway, a four-star tight end from St. Louis. Jackson McGohan, remember, he was originally committed to Cincinnati, flipped to LSU. He's a three-star from Ohio. Then you've got Kamorian Pimpton, also originally committed to Vanderbilt. He flipped in the early signing period to LSU. He's a four-star tight end out of Texas. So one returning starter, three guys in the 2023 class. I know nothing about these three guys, these three tight ends that are coming in the 2023 class, other than their ranking, where they went to high school, where they're from. I don't evaluate tight ends. I don't know if any of them, if all of them, if any of them, could contribute in 2023, but I do think you need to add a little bit of tight end depth there in the spring transfer period. So I'm looking at tight end. I'm also looking at offensive line depth. I know you got a lot of returners coming back in 2023. You've got Charles Turner, who's coming back, who has 2 years of eligibility left. Garrett Dellinger is coming back, 2 years left. Miles Frazier, another one with 2 years left. Of course, Will Campbell, I think that he's going to be your anchor. He's going to be your rock on the left side of the offensive line. Of course, he's coming back. Emory Jones is coming back, another one who got a ton of experience his freshman year. That's your starting left and right side for the next 3 years. That's what I believe. Maybe just two, because they'll probably go to the NFL. I'd like it to be three, though. And then you've got some of the younger guys coming in the 2023 class. Bo Bordelon coming out of Louisiana. You got Zalen Hurd, who probably is going to be able to contribute to the offensive line now. So you've got some guys coming in the 2023 class. I wouldn't mind adding some more, you know, kind of swing tackles in there, maybe some very versatile pieces on the offensive line. We learned this past year that offensive line injuries can be absolutely detrimental to your football team. So while there are some solid returning pieces, I'd like to see a few more added in there on the offensive line. So that's what I'm looking at. Maybe add another quarterback. I would sleep better at night knowing that there is at least a third option before you get to Ricky Collins. Fingers crossed, toes crossed, everything crossed that you don't have to get to that point. But, you know, I don't want to get to that point and say, oops, you know, we got to put the true freshman in. Wouldn't hate another tight end. Think you're solid at wide receiver. Think you're solid at running back. Wouldn't hate a few more versatile pieces on the offensive line. So that's what I'm looking at. Those five remaining scholarships available, fill them in, at least offensively. And I'll get to the defense tomorrow. But it is a mailbag Wednesday. Love it when y'all send in your questions. Love chatting with y'all every week. So I'll get to those coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about a super delicious treat that you don't have to splurge all your fat and your calories and your macros on, and it's Built Bar. So we just got through the holidays. I know my goal is to eat a little bit healthier this year. And if that's your goal too, then Built Bar will be the key. You've got to try Built Bar. It's healthy and tasty. They're so delicious that you won't even think that they're good for you. You might think that you're cheating because you're eating a candy bar, but they're perfect for your New Year's resolution. So what makes them so good is the fact that they're covered in 100% real chocolate, like a candy bar. And I'm not even sure how they do it, but while covered in 100% real chocolate and while it tastes like a candy bar, while it tastes like a dessert, it's healthy for you. It's only 130 calories and only 4 grams of sugar and a whopping 17 grams of protein. It'll keep you full so long. I eat them as kind of a midday pick-me-up to get me through the middle of the day. Now you don't need to wait around to get a box. You can go to Sam's Club, run in, grab a 13-bar box with our hit flavors, brownie batter and churro, or you can go in and grab a box at Walmart. So go to the pharmacy section. You can pick up a 4-bar box of the cookies and cream, double chocolate, or coconut puffs. I love the cookies and cream flavor. All right. It is a mailbag Wednesday. Appreciate y'all for sending in your questions. Remember that every Wednesday I get to your questions. You can send them in on Twitter. You can send them in on YouTube. You can just comment them below in the comment section. You can DM me at CarolineFenton1. Tweet me at LockedOnLSU, however you'd like to get those questions in. I love hearing from y'all and love hearing what you want to talk about. One question that was sent in that I think is pretty interesting, and it's going to be an off-season topic all season long, every single year. One person asks, do you think that LSU is poised to win a national championship this year? Now, if you would have asked me that going into the 2019 season, I don't know what I would have said, honestly. I would have said, okay, like LSU's coming off of a really good Fiesta Bowl win, a 10-win season, losing some key pieces defensively. I don't know if I would have told you going into the 2019 season, and I don't know if you would have either, if I would have said, yep, absolutely, I think that this team is poised to be the best team in the history of college football. So I think, sure, like, why not? Why not? In Brian Kelly's first season, he won the West and got to Atlanta and played a really tough game against the team that ultimately did go on to win the national championship. You know, I'm looking at LSU's toughest competition in the SEC, obviously Alabama is going to be 1A. Well, they're going through a quarterback switch. They don't know who's going to be their starting guy under center. They lost both of their coordinators in the offseason. Pete Golding went to Ole Miss, and of course, Bill O'Brien back to the NFL under Bill Belichick, the New England Patriots. So I think that Alabama is kind of in a transitional period. Now, we've seen how Nick Saban can navigate those quote-unquote transitional periods, and then they end up in the national championship. But I would say that in a time where LSU has a lot of consistency and doesn't have a whole lot of – or has a ton of turnover, whereas Alabama doesn't necessarily. They lost their quarterback. They lost Will Anderson, their best piece defensively. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much of a gauntlet Alabama is going to be this year. I look at Georgia. They're going through the same thing, not like losing Stetson Bennett. He absolutely was a key cog in their national championship this year. I couldn't say the same thing about 2021, but this year that was a different story. So is Georgia going to be able to have a smoother transition into the quarterback of the future? And I don't know the answer to that question. Georgia looks like they're here to stay. It's not going to be an easy team to beat just because they're losing a Jalen Carter and a Stetson Bennett, but those are tough pieces to replace. You know, I don't think that there are certain teams that can be ignored. No, I don't think that Ole Miss can be ignored. I don't know what their quarterback situation is going to be like in 2023, but they've been collecting a lot of talent, young talent. I don't think that Ole Miss is necessarily going to be the team to beat in college football this year, but I'm looking at individual games that could potentially give LSU some trouble. I think those are all on the table. But when you talk about could they be poised to win a national championship this year, my answer to that is why the heck not? This is a good team with a whole lot of consistency, has the top transfer portal class coming in this year, has a top 10 recruiting class coming in this year. They had a really talented freshman this past year that made massive contributions. Harold Perkins, Will Campbell, Emory Jones, Mason Taylor, they all have 1 year of experience under their belt. They've only gotten stronger. They've only gotten better. I think this team is poised to take steps ahead. I think this team is poised to make leaps and bounds forward. But every year is different. Every week is tricky in the SEC. So I'm not going to say that, you know, absolutely 100%. Second question, a little baseball-related question, which I appreciate when y'all send these in, because we have so much news going on in football and basketball. Sometimes I feel like this time of year, pre-baseball season, it kind of gets ignored, so I'd like an excuse to talk about baseball. But Dylan sent this question in, and I think it's interesting. It says, what do you think is going to be the toughest or scariest matchup for LSU baseball this season? I think the obvious answer is Tennessee. Just considering how well they played this past year, they have one of the top recruiting classes in the country. I think they have one of the best coaches in the country in Tony Vitello. They have some of the best, one of the best bullpens in the country. They've got sluggers on that team. So Tennessee is a good team, and I think they're poised to be good over the next few years. So that's the easy answer. I think the not so obvious answer is Texas A&M. Texas A&M is a top 10 team preseason. And Texas A&M also is the first SEC matchup on LSU's schedule. It's at the very beginning of conference play. I think, you know, Texas A&M is going to be a good team, and it's going to be a big challenge going into conference play. And also what that matchup means, I think, is really important, because I think it means, like, all of this hype that LSU baseball is getting preseason, you know, unanimous number one team in the country, number one recruiting class in the country. Got some of the top transfers in the country in Tommy White and Paul Skeens. So there's going to be a lot of hype surrounding this team. So are you going to be able to live up to the hype? Because if you can't in the first matchup in SEC play against Texas A&M, then all that love that you got preseason is going to go away real quickly. You're going to get humbled real quickly. So I think it could be tough, and I also think that it could be a good measuring stick game as LSU gets into conference play. So I'm looking at those two in particular, but Texas A&M, I think, is a tricky one there. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. So for your second listen, check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. Experts Isaac Shaden and Andy Patton bring you everything that you need to know on and off the court. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, coaches, and players throughout the college basketball landscape. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.